This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Hundreds of movement leaders, activists, organizers, funders, and journalists gathered in Atlanta, Georgia in June 2023 at Alight Align Arise, an invitation-only conference on reparations organized by the Decolonizing Wealth Project. As the conference's media partner, Yes Media spoke with more than a dozen prominent organizers, activists, and leaders. Among them were Venikia Williams, campaign manager at Media 2070, and Trevor Smith, director of narrative change at Liberation Ventures, where he's building the Reparations Narrative Lab.
Hello, I'm Venikia Williams. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the campaign manager for Media 2070.
I'm Trevor Smith. I use he, him pronouns. I'm the director of narrative change at Liberation Ventures.
So the two of you are very much engaged in narrative work and narrative shifting, but you're at a conference around reparations. Tell me how the idea of reparations and narrative shifting collide, and what reparations means to someone who's engaged in narrative work.
I would say the way that they collide is that, you know, that this nation has yet to really reckon with its history. And so for so long, when you say the word reparations, you would get like a recoil. So we really have to change the narrative around reparations and really see it as a healing process as instead of something that kind of makes us recoil. So I would say that's the way in which they intersect.
Absolutely. Just to add to that, stories tell us about who we can be, who we've been. And so the story around reparations and the reparative culture that we can build, it's our job to sort of build that what's never been seen before. And so the imaginative work of dreaming up new worlds is the work that I believe we do.
Yeah.
You have also, I know, and through your past work, talked about the idea of media reparations. What are media reparations?
Yes, so media reparations, we try not to be too prescriptive, but when we talk about it, we talk about what would the world look like if Black folks were able to own their stories from ideation through creation, through distribution, and a friend of ours recently added through experience. And so what would it mean? What would it look like for ownership and control without interference of white supremacy and racial capitalism to be present and to really own those stories and to reclaim what's been stolen?
Yeah, and to me, media reparations means a lot of things. But when I think about it, I think about anti-Black narratives and the role that the media has played in creating and sustaining anti-Black narratives. And so I think nowadays when we think about media, we think of kind of just traditional press, but kind of the first popular media in this country were minstrel shows. And that is where we got a lot of the anti-Black stereotypes that still stick with Black people today. You know, Black people is lazy. That's a stereotype that was born through minstrel shows. And so when I hear media reparations, I think about what is the role that the media has to play in uprooting anti-Black narratives and creating a pro-Black world.
Absolutely. I would add to that, there's been the case of the myth of Black inferiority being perpetuated. And that's ever since the first newspaper was created, right? And so the technologies change, but the lie hasn't shifted much. And so it looks different with each new iteration of technology, but that myth and the anti-Black narratives remain. And so we're doing the work of undoing that and rewriting something more beautiful and more true and truly human.
Right. Media 2070, they have a great essay that details kind of the history of media and the role that they've played in creating, sustaining anti-Black harm. And they talk about how, the media profited off of slavery as well through the use of runaway slave ads. And so in thinking about reparations, I think we have to think about it holistically. Of course, the government has an important and probably the most important role to play, but there are other institutions that we also have to hold accountable in this work.
When we think about any kind of government support or reparations directly, there is the national conversation around who is deserving of help, who is deserving of welfare or benefits, and certainly I'm sure it'll come up with reparations. And so how do those anti-Black narratives that perpetuate the myth of, as you were saying, Black inferiority play into or play against reparations becoming a reality?
Yeah, I mean, they stand in a big way. And I think we see these narratives play out across our policy spaces. So I think we see it with, you know, food assistance, with SNAP. We see it with housing assistance. And then, of course, we're going to see it with reparations. You know, there's this idea that Black people are irresponsible with money. There's this idea that Black people won't be, and Ta-Nehisi Coates actually talked about this yesterday, that we would spend it irresponsibly. But that's not really the point. You know, it's something that is owed. And so I think that reparations is actually a really beautiful project, because I think it is so large that it can actually uproot this idea that Black people don't know what to do with their money. They don't know how to self-govern, because I do think that sovereignty and is a really important part of the reparations conversation.
You were referencing opening remarks by Ta-Nehisi Coates at this conference that we're meeting at, Alight, Align, Arise. And one of the other things he talked about was, well, first of all, he was like, it's none of anybody's business how people spend their money. But the other thing that I thought was so important was the portrayal of people as whole, complex human beings. He's written, you know, comic book characters and narratives in mainstream media. And how important is that aspect of, is that a huge part of the work that you do around narrative shifting, that people of color, Black people, are complex human beings with all of the dimensionality that our traditional media have just left out often of the stories?
Yes. And so Black feminists thought one of the manifestos talks about us being seen as levelly human, not as superhuman, not as less than, but being levelly human. And so when we say we want to write and access to these narratives, it's not just the ones that paint us in the best light, but in the truest sense, the ones that paint us the good, bad, and the ugly and show our full humanity. It's a reclamation of that. So I would say the complexities are the most beautiful stories.
Right. And we deserve to be superheroes. We deserve to be seen in that light. I mean, look at what we're seeing right now with the backlash with Little Mermaid. You know, I think that it's very telling as a society when we are arguing about a children's story and who should play that children's story. You know, Black people aren't even allowed to be mermaids. So I think that we need to tell full stories, whether they're fictional or non-fictional, stories of Black people. And we really deserve to be able to show up in the ways in which other communities have been able to show up in their stories.
Do you see a change, especially in the big commercial industries, the media making industries? Do you see a change because folks have infiltrated, if you will, these fought their way to the top or fought their way in the rooms where these stories are told?
I would say I've seen a change, but not enough change. And so oftentimes people want you to celebrate the one who got into the room and not all those that were left behind. There's this tokenism. There's this idea that just the one story is enough. But Media 2070 truly talks about a future that's abundant with stories. So it's not just one mermaid,
right,
but several. We can have a Spider-Man. We can have all these different stories that are being told. So it's not that the one isn't beautiful and shouldn't be celebrated, but it surely isn't enough.
I think two things come to mind. I think in the midst of 2020 in the quote-unquote racial reckoning, we saw a lot of newspapers start to apologize for institutional racism. I don't think that they, you know, those apologies, I think, were welcomed, but I don't think that they went far enough. And one of the things that I would really like to see in terms of change from newspapers is different types of beats. You know, there are so many reporters who report on crime, but there aren't as many reporters who report on care or report on mutual aid, you know, all the ways in which we help each other, you know, because they're not seen as newsworthy stories. But I actually think that the way in which we care for each other is much more important to write about and to think about on a day-to-day basis than the ways in which we harm each other. And I think we actually help each other a lot more often than we harm each other. So that's one way that I'd like to see more change. And then the other thing that comes to mind is something that we're seeing more so in like sports and particularly the NBA, a lot of NBA athletes are starting to have their own podcasts. And so when we talk about ownership, I think that it's so important that the folks who are core to the story are telling the story. So a lot of NBA players are starting their own podcasts, they're starting their own media companies, LeBron James, Steph Curry. And these are the types of things that I'd like to see more from, like, our Black leaders, those who have access to power, those who have access to capital. These are the folks are the ones who are going to be able to empower folks who are closer to the ground to uplift their stories. And so I love to see what I'm seeing there, and I just want to see more of it.
I'm wondering if the notion of reparations as a whole is something that you feel enough people are engaged on in a broad sense. The mass media is slowly talking about reparations. We have pieces of legislation that are being discussed. California has a task force. Do you think that there's enough media discussion of what's already out there on reparations, or is it mostly sort of grassroots social media, you know, folks on Twitter trying to engage in the conversation?
I would say no, there isn't enough. But even in what there is, it's inaccurate sometimes. And so the cherry picking that we heard about, where they're only taking pieces and parts of the story. And so what the public is then being presented with isn't a full view of what reparations can mean and what it can look like fully. And so when reporters are irresponsible, I think that's what it is, then you leave people being less knowledgeable about what they need. And like I mentioned before, misinformation has always been the goal. Like, they want to uphold the status quo. And so mis and disinformation is the way to do that. And so leaving out those key pieces of information that can empower the public is what's currently happening. And that's what I see.
Can you be more specific? Like, give me an example of what are the pieces of the story around reparations that are being left out, and how is it misleading people?
So I would say some of the things around when you only see a dollar amount and you don't necessarily see how things are attributed and how they'll be allocated, when you talk about different things that can look like repair but aren't truly reparative, but they just label it reparations. Those are some of the things, but I wonder if you have a few more specifics.
Yeah, no, cosign 100% of that. I think, you know, I started a newsletter called Reparations Daily-ish 2 years ago, and so there is, there's enough news to start a newsletter about, and I'm just astonished. I think over the past 2 years, I've compiled hundreds and hundreds of news articles from across the globe, so it is a global conversation, but to Vanikia's point, we definitely need more, and we definitely need more accurate stories and more fuller stories. And so I think reparations is mostly seen right now through a financial lens, and the media doesn't really help in telling that fuller story. It is about the money, but it's not just about the money. You know, I often say that reparations is an economic project, but it's also a political and cultural project as well. And so I think that's the part of the story that the media is usually missing. You know, there's a psychological harm that you can't put a number to, that I always hear Black folks talk about when we talk about reparations. So it's not just about fitting reparations into the kind of current iteration of capitalism that we have. It's about changing systems. And so the media definitely misses out on that part. And then to Vanikia's other point, there are institutions or individuals who are grappling with the role that they should play in reparations, such as churches or such as white people who are the descendants of people who owned people. And that's great that they're grappling with that, but those stories need to include the voices of the grassroots organizers who are doing the work. Because oftentimes I see things that, I don't know, grassroots organizers would label as reparations be labeled as reparations. And to the lay person, to the average person, it's going to get confusing. And so that's why narrative is so important in this. We all have to be aligned on actually what we mean by reparations. And I think that the grassroots organizers, those who are building power at the local level, are the ones who should be included in all of these stories.
And the reparations the idea of it has to be grounded in history, right? And history is something that we are seeing this culture war being waged against by design, especially in the last few years. Do you worry that there's just often just a lot of missing historical context that, you know, seems like it might be obvious, but really still needs, bears repeating and needs stating? We need reparations because X, Y, and C, you know, this nation was built on a Holocaust, et cetera. Do you feel that history is that contentious ground?
I think there definitely needs to be a learning of history and a reintroduction to it. But as important as that is, I think that's a prerequisite for the imaginative work that's also needed. We need to know where we've been to say where we're going, but people's imaginations have been dampened. And so we can't even do the work of saying what tomorrow might look like because we're worried about current day issues, right? And so I think history is a part of that, so we don't get the story twisted. But what is the new story that we're going to tell? That world building, I think, is what's truly key in this moment, especially. Mm-hmm.
World building, I'm hearing a lot more of that. So imagining the future that you want, or just spelling it out and showcasing it in some way. And you know, that is something that we see happening more and more of. But I don't think our mainstream media really have gotten on that bandwagon yet.
Well, to that point, within world building, it also includes world destroying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something has to be demolished, right, and cleared away. And so that's not as beautiful as a story, pretty of a picture to paint. So I think that's why we hear about it less.
Right. And I think another narrative I think that's really important as we think about like world making, world building, is what we're calling radical solidarity. And so we need, I think, all Black people, all people of color, and white people too, to build this new progressive, transformational, welcoming world that's rooted in new values. I think that narrative is so important because it relates to culture and what we value as a culture. And we are so, so, so disconnected as people. You know, we live in a world right now, in a society right now, where you can walk into a school and shoot children and nothing changes. You know, culturally, we are really, really broken. And so I think that radical solidarity is a key part of this world-making effort. And so until we can come together and see each other's humanity and like actually true humanity, you know, we're not going to be able to move this work forward.
We've been asking all our guests this question that I'd like to end with the two of you as well, which is, if you could wave a magic wand and have one thing that you could make happen to get closer to reparations or to achieve reparations, what would it be?
All Confederate statues, schools named after Confederate leaders, streets, bridges named after Confederate leaders, gone. Not to say that that history can't be taught in other places. It should, you know, the history of the Confederacy should be taught in schools, should be taught in museums. But what we choose to honor in public plays an important role in shaping a culture. So right here in Atlanta, they have a beautiful memorial to Martin Luther King and Coretta, where they are actually buried. And then there's like a voice box where you can hear MLK's speeches throughout the day. You know, those are the types of people, MLK and others, all of the other fallen Black soldiers who we don't know of, don't hear of, they need to be commemorated in public space. So the first thing for me, an important part of reparations, an important part about narrative, is choosing what we is changing what we choose to memorialize in public. There's so many beautiful Black stories and other stories who are really American heroes that deserve to be honored in public. So that would be at the top of my list.
Thank you.
Yes, I think what's pressing for me in this moment is restoring our relationship and connection to the land. Mm. I think even as people are talking about air quality and wildfires and things of that sort, I think what would be beautiful is trusting our indigenous kin to teach us how to steward the land well and to restore connection and right relationship to it, to the land. because I see land back not just as a return of what was stolen, but then a reversal of what's been damaged. And so I see that as a part of reparations, because what does it mean to change the world and then there's no world to enjoy? Mm. So I would say that would be the thing that I would want to change.
Let's wrap up with your respective organizations. Media 2070 is what exactly? What is the magic year 2070 mean?
So the year 2070 is the year in which we've received reparations. It's real, it's beautiful, it's abundant. And our stories have full agency, we are fully self-determined and we can fully thrive. Those stories are told without interference and disruption, without the need to earn a dollar, but truly to be able to be told for the sake of being told. And so we see that within the cultural space. We see that within the infrastructural and policy changes. We're calling on the FCC to do an audit of its anti-Black history. We're asking for a reparative fund to be given so that from the spectrums and airwaves, like Black news sources and entertainment sources can be fully funded. We're doing things such as Black Future Newsstand in Harlem, where we're taking headlines from the future, telling news stories and saying, how beautiful would this be if these were the new beats, yeah. If the possibilities were told versus all the problems. And so we're looking into doing more cultural and public installations like that.
Wonderful. And a website?
Media2070.org.
And Trevor, what would you like to for listeners and viewers to know about the work you do?
I'm the Director of Narrative Change at Liberation Ventures. Our mission is to accelerate the Black-led movement for racial repair, and we really see ourselves as a field builder supporting the reparations movement. So we do grant making, capacity building, and narrative change work. And so what I'm really focused on is kind of facilitating the growth of narrative power. And so really thinking about how can we increase the ability to tell stories that can shift mental models and cultural mindsets. So I'm really always looking out to bringing more artists and cultural makers into the movement. And so over the past year, I've been working with Venikia and other organizers in co-creating a narrative framework that we're calling the Narrative House. And hopefully this can be a tool for future storytelling and content creation and creative action. So my vision is really, how can we bring artists, those who hold individual narrative power, to work alongside the organizers who are building political power on the ground to shape a broader narrative throughout society. So artists and cultural makers, hit us up.
And a website?
Liberationventures.org.
Thank you both so much.
I've been speaking with Venikia Williams, campaign manager of Media 2070, and Trevor Smith, director of narrative change at Liberation Ventures, during a recent conference on reparations in Atlanta, Georgia, produced for Yes Media, where I work as racial justice editor. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.